This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Wednesday. Ooh, that means we get to Jeff Stein here. Is Jeff going to spend the entire time talking about, the only thing we need to talk about is who leaked this. That's the only thing. Nothing else.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah, that'll go over real well if he does that. I hope he doesn't.
I hope he doesn't either. We will talk to Jeffrey coming up here in just a little bit. Also, Hannah Valenta is going to join us. She's running over 33, I think it's 33B. I think it might be 33B. Oh, 33A. She's running 33A. Hannah Valenta. That's a name, isn't it? That's like a crime noir name from Los Angeles in 1947. Hannah Valenta. Nice. That or a 1980 sitcom cop show, you know, Hannah Valenta, you know. That's a great name. I love that name. Anyway, she's running 33A, Democrat of the Day. That'll be in the 5 o'clock hour today. We talked when we were having Sven on the air, and once again, all my best to Sven. He's definitely getting the visibility that he deserves, and we loved having him on the air for basically almost a year last year. It was just great fun. We very much enjoyed having Sven Sundgaard on the air. Sven and I talked about one of the things that really bugs me about climate change. Now, I already know climate change denier guy go, Matt, April was cold. Climate change can't be happening. April was cold. No, April was a fairly normal April. It was a little bit cooler than it should have been, but it was fairly normal. We used to be like that a lot more. April used to be just garbage. I remember fishing openers in mid-May. With winter jackets and mittens and gloves.
How about 4 years ago and we had a blizzard in the middle of April?
Yeah, it was six inches, something like that, 6 inches of snow in Hopkins.
I think we actually did have an official blizzard warning that day, too.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't just us saying it was a blizzard. It really was.
So
crazy.
You just want to sit there and say, one cold day, see, no problem, as the world roasts. The reality is that there are these little signs you see, and whether that's animals that are migrating north. We talked about that tick. That's the tick that has the little white spot in its back, and if it bites you, it can actually make you allergic to red meat. That's welcome to Minnesota. Hell, let's put a sign out there. Come on in, good fellas, because that's what's happening. We're getting that crud. It's only a matter of time before we start getting some of these weirder animals getting up here. More snakes. I don't like snakes. I live in Minnesota because I hardly ever come across a snake. That's one of the nice things. Big spiders and stuff. I don't like gators. I don't. When we get gators here, will you finally admit, yeah, I guess something is wrong? Can we finally acknowledge, oh, well, that's an oopsie.
Oh, we got the gator visiting us here at the station behind Bryant Lake. That'll be a thing in like 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, I'll send Patrick back there to change up the light bulbs in the tower.
Oh, I think he's the guy that's going to do that. Yeah. He can be the gator hunter.
They're only good for short bursts of speed and for short distances. Just got to keep running. It's our PT program here at AM 950. So we have just done it again. The one thing that just annoys me most of all about climate change. We will have... like, you know, low 40s, low 40s, low 40s, low 40s, low 40s, low 40s, long, long 40s, long 40s, and boom, now 60. You know, one day at 50-something, and now, what's the temperature going to be on Monday? It's like 82. We just completely skip like 15 degrees and end up, you know, in a much warmer, well, in the spring, we end up getting much, you know, all of a sudden it goes and jumps dramatically. Yeah, what was it? Yeah, it's, 60 tomorrow, 63, 69, 64, 80, 83, 78, 78. Well, I guess we're done with that. Because it's such a jar to the system. It doesn't happen, rapidly anymore. It happens in November, too. 60, 60, 60, 60. One day at 50, one day in the 40s, and we never get above 39 again. God, it makes it just so... I understand some people's like, oh, I don't mind the warmer weather, or, you know, it's just kind of thing. I just, it, it, it really is hard to kind of get that kind of an adjustment, especially when it's held on for so long. So that is the sign the earth is broken. When we can't, you know, we can't get a normal rise in temperature like through spring or a normal fall of temperature in the fall. It basically just jumps 20 degrees. Here we are. We're here. We're not going to go down again. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. I think obviously the main story we're still focusing on, and I know we're going to talk with Jeff quite a bit about this coming up with his visit, is the leaked Alito ruling on Roe v. Wade. And there is a person who did an analysis, because once again, the argument they're making is A, that abortion is not mentioned in the Constitution, henceforth it can't be regulated by the powers that be, and B, that the due process clause in the 14th and 5th and 14th Amendment, which basically guarantee life, liberty, and property, you know, that you can have those things, that should have never been applied here. And someone, this Dr. Lauren Thompson, who is on the Twitter machine here, professor of history, independent studies at Kennesaw State University. She wrote this, and I got to run through this because this will show you how outrageous this ruling is. Justice Alito argues the court has long been reluctant to recognize rights that were not mentioned in the Constitution. We must ask what the 14th Amendment means. The clear answer is that the 14th Amendment does not provide the right to an abortion. Okay. By his logic, now this is where the doctor steps in, Dr. Lauren steps in. By this logic, here's what else the 14th, the Constitution does not protect. Here you go. The ruling Loving versus Virginia, 1967, marrying someone of a different race. That was illegal in a lot of states because of Alito's argument. And by the way, Alito actually must acknowledge that this is a bunch of horse crud, because he keeps trying to make the argument in his ruling that the only one we're talking about is abortion. Do not imply that we're talking about other things. But by his argument on this case, he is opening up that every one of these following rulings that you're about to hear, every one of them, that basically they could be overturned because his interpretation of the 14th Amendment, which is unique to him and these four other clowns on this Supreme Court, every other Supreme Court has acknowledged that these last 50 years that this is how, you know, this is the law. It's only Alito and his group of installed. These guys are there by design to put this kind of ruling in place. And the reality is that it just shows that this is garbage, because this is what the real Republican agenda is. They're going to revisit every single one of these. Marrying someone of a different race. Loving versus Virginia, 1967. That would now be open for revisiting due to Alito's ruling. Birth control, Griswold versus Connecticut, 1965. Einstadt versus Baird in 1973. Other cases as well, that would be open for revisiting. Women with young children who want to work, Phillips versus Martin Marietta, 1971. That case was determined on this once again. With Alito's ruling, now you could have states where they say women with young children can't go to work and it'd be illegal. Women's ability to preside over legal documents involving their kids. Reed versus Reed, 1971. That could be revisited. And trust me, there's a lot of white male Republicans that, you know, as you talk about, oh, we're going to get rid of abortion, they're trying to make it more difficult for women to collect support payments from the fathers of those children. They would love to revisit this, because this is not about life. This is about dominance. That's all this is about. Housing and benefits for female members of the armed services. Frontenero versus Richardson, 1973. That basically said you can't have insufficient housing for women in a military base. Advertising jobs that specifically only men can apply for. The Pittsburgh Press versus Pittsburgh Commission on Human Relations, 1973. 1973, they were advertising for jobs that men only apply. Think about that. And once again, Alito is saying we need to revisit that, that a business should be able to put that out there. Women who get pregnant on the job and are fired, Cleveland BOE versus LaFleur, 1974, that would be negated under Alito's same exact argument. Widows' rights, Kahn versus Shevlin, 1974, Wengler versus Druggist Mutual, 1980, those would be revisited under Alito's ruling. Women who make less than men at the same work, Corn and Glass Works versus Brennan, 1974. Once again, make it completely legal, saying, hey, the chicky poo needs to get paid a few bucks less. Well, kind of that's the way still things are, for God's sakes. But it'd be even more obnoxious and legal under Alito's ruling here. They could revisit that. Women's right to serve on juries. Taylor versus Louisiana, 1975. JEB versus Alabama, 1994. 1994, this was in question? 1994, women serving on, wow. But hey, good news. Thanks to Justice Alito, that can get revisited again. So a bunch of white Republicans in the South can say, I don't think the chicky poos need to get on the jury. They always have those bleeding hearts. We need to go find only Republican men. Social Security benefits for women. Weinberger versus Weinsfeld, 1975. Garofino versus Goldfarb, 1977. Those could be revisited. Unemployment benefits for pregnant women. Turner versus Department of Employment Security, 1975. Pregnant women's exclusion from employer health and disability plans. I remember that when I was a kid. I remember that was a big fight. 1976, General Electric versus Gilbert in 1976. But guess what? Now this argument by Alito, which negates the 14th Amendment and how it can be interpreted, basically says now, well, you could basically go back and say, pregnant women, you're on your own. Because once again, reminder, Republicans love babies. That's right. They just can't stand the vehicle that's carrying said fetus, nor can they stand that baby when it comes out of the womb. They can't stand it then, but while it's in that despisable thing that they call a woman, they are all for it there. That's your standard Republican argument right there. Women's right to get jobs traditionally held by men. Dothard versus Rawlingson, 1977. Pregnant women's rights to advocate, in advance in the workplace. That's Nashville Gas versus Saddy, 1977. Women of color's access to higher education. That's right. That was determined on the 14th Amendment under that clause, the Due Process Clause on Liberty. Regents for the University of Cavalier Back versus Back, 1978. Fisher versus University of Texas, 2016. Wow. Benefits for unemployed moms, Calafino versus Westcott, 1979, a wife's property within a marriage. Kitchburg versus Ventura, 1980, once again, can be revisited thanks to this Alito ruling. A wife's property within marriage, Kitchburg versus Ventura. Wow. Going back to those days. She's the chick, so she doesn't really have anything. She gets the pots and pans. Wow. Sexual harassment in the workplace, Meteor Savings Bank versus Vinson, 1986. Oh, yeah. Oh, God. I mean, that's the scary part, is it wasn't that long ago where sexual harassment in the workplace, and frankly, still is a problem today, but back then was you don't like it? Well, you can quit. And the reality is that ruling was the 14th Amendment, the Due Process Clause and for Liberty. Pregnant women can choose to work who choose to work dangerous jobs. UAW versus Johnson Controls. Sexual harassment and abuse in secondary schools. Wow. Franklin versus Gwinnett County Public Schools, 1992. Gebster versus Lago Vista Independent School District, 1998. Davis versus Monroe County BOE, 1999. Women who want to attend a state-funded college of their choosing. U.S. versus Virginia, 1996. Women's testimony in domestic violence, Davis versus Washington. Anyone who's not a white, straight man, that was, basically they could not, women couldn't testify in a domestic violence case. It could only white, straight men could be the only ones that talked there in a case like that. By the way, not a complete list, but just think about all the cases, all the precedent that's been put forward that Alito's pulled from his ass ruling now opens up that we can revisit. I mean, it truly is disturbing. Nancy is in Bloomington. She wanted to chime in on the 9th and 14th Amendments. Welcome on in.
Hi, Matt. Well, what I am wondering is I never hear them mention the 9th Amendment. And for anyone who doesn't know, to paraphrase it, it says, just because we didn't enumerate a right in this document doesn't mean you don't have it.
Well,
so, under the Ninth Amendment, we could have a right to privacy.
Well, and you see, and abortion. I mean, it's not in the
exactly.
Constitution. It's the thing which is crazy about this ruling is the Constitution has for well over 200 years been identified as a living, breathing, evolving document. And that's what it's supposed to be. And what Alito's entire argument is no, it's only face value as written, 1776, that's it. You can't add anything to it. And that is really a disturbing reality that they're trying to push down there.
Oh, and didn't that start with Scalia? Didn't he have the same attitude that... originalists. Now they're calling themselves originalists. They used to call themselves strict constructionists.
Now Scalia was an absolute jackass, and thank you, Nancy.
Yes,
he was. Thank you, Nancy. I appreciate it. Now, Scalia was an absolute fool. Scalia was to understand the Ninth Amendment. He understood that things, you know, what we didn't cover, you know, it's a mulligan. Here you go. And so he, you know, and you know, as a matter of fact, I mean, he actually had some rulings that said, no, there's nothing in the Second Amendment about Uzis and some, you know, machine guns necessarily, that's not something that you have a necessary right to. I mean, he's written some opinions, which would be surprising, but because of the way he interpreted it, you know, he was kind of an originalist, but he also understood that there were some things that were there, but he wouldn't. At times, Scalia went cross into the jeopardizing of public safety just out of spite, as opposed to Gorsuch and Kavanaugh and Justice Amy Salem Witch Trial, as well as Thomas and Alito. That is, you know, they are all there. I love all of them. How dead to rights they got caught lying, saying, oh, we're not going to change Roe v. Wade. In their under oath in their hearings, in their confirmation hearings, under oath saying that we're not going to change this. I like the idea of revisiting that is like, did you lie under oath? Did you said back then that the Roe versus Wade could not be changed, could not be challenged. It was established precedent. And now they're out there openly trying to do it. This is ugly. By the way, I can't wait to find out how Stein's going to come at this thing. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. I want to share a post from social media that is so spot on, it's not even funny. When I do return, it's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I can shut off this stereo. It's the Matt McNeil Show. There you go. Just kind of surprised by the music vocals there. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So I've got a friend of mine, Amy Stedman. Amy, I'm giving you 100% credit because this is spot on. First, they denied a president a Supreme Court justice, and you were not outraged. You scrolled through your social media pages and fell for propaganda about a bunch of emails. Now they've come for abortion, then they'll come for contraception, then they'll come for gay rights and gay marriage, then they'll come for interracial marriage, and then they get what they wanted, white men with all the power again. And you ate it with a spoon with lots of TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram, and a side of Twitter. And she's exactly right. Right now, there is such outrage. I mean, Republicans are scared to death. I mean, you would think that they'd be trying to have a little parties and parades and celebrations. Nope, they're not. Because it's as I described yesterday, they're the dog that caught the car. They're chasing the car, they caught it, and now they're like, what the heck do I do with this? They're all of a sudden realizing, what was it? The Gallup poll said 80% of people wanted Roe v. Wade to stay legal. Most of the polls show 60 to 65% of Americans want Roe v. Wade to stay the law of the land. And when you get down to it, there's like seven or eight states where immediately there would not be, and you could not get an abortion even if you were raped, it was incest, or it was life of the mother. And only like 6% of the population agrees with this. And it's all of a sudden, it's the Republicans who have... I think, and we should be very acknowledging that the anti-choice crowd, the anti-abortion crowd, has been able to present themselves as a far larger majority than that they really are. And that's great when you're not all of a sudden in the driver's seat, but now all of a sudden they are. And everyone's like, why the hell are we doing something only 31% of the population wants to go with? Why are we doing that? Why is this standard being put in place? Why are we doing this? And the reality is that they caught the car. And the Republicans don't quite know what to do with it because they realize there's so many people angry at them. They're scared. That's where they're at. They are scared. Which is very unfortunate because I guarantee you at least a third of the people who right now are, I am so livid. On the 9th of November, the day after the election, are going to be like, oh, that was yesterday? Oh, I was meaning to vote. I was going to go vote, but I was watching. I was on Netflix, and then I was on TikTok, and I was running around, and I had to go to my spin class, and I was just so busy. I didn't really want to. And the Republicans know this. The Republicans know this because the biggest enemy to the Democratic cause right now is the Democrats themselves. They brainwash themselves with the idea that I went to a protest and that they think that that did something. Now, it's nice. So showing unity. Great. It's window dressing. The only thing you can do to change this dynamic is vote. The only thing you can do is vote. It's great you make a great poster. It's great that you make. I got some great shots from my Instagram feed. Look at me. I look like a protester. But if you're not registered to vote and you don't vote on November 8th, none of that matters. And time and time and time again, I have sit here and watched as, oh, look how angry the Democrats are. Oh, we're outraged. We're outraged. And yet comes election time. Oh, I was busy. They made me work my legs. I got to go down and vote. I don't want to do that. I just want to say, I'm playing Halo all day long, man. Just, it's consistent. It's, Republicans are not scared of this because you guys have got the attention of an infant with keys dangled in front of them. And it's really disturbing. One of the reasons why I think I'm almost positive a Republican from the court leaked this, maybe Alito himself, is because they knew if it came out at the end of June, early July, that would be two less months that they could that they had between then and the election to where this would die down. And they didn't want to risk it, but they know, hey, April, May, June, or May, June, July, August, September, October, 6 months. Most people won't even remember the thing they heard the week beforehand, let alone this issue. And they know it. And people right now who are screaming at the top of their lungs about this issue, they're going to, you want me to what? Vote? Yeah, I protested. I made an internet meme. I did my part. No, you didn't. You didn't do a damn thing. The only thing that matters is voting. So don't sit there, as Amy points out, and scroll through your social media. Right now, the Republicans are scared, and they should be, because they're the dog that caught the car, and they realize now they're on the wrong side of popularity. And so they're desperately trying to figure out a way to sell this. Make sure you're registered to vote. Make sure five of your friends are registered to vote. Make sure those five friends get to the polls on November 8th and vote. Because if everyone who's listening to me does that, the Democrats are going to wipe out the Republican majorities across the country. They will. They absolutely will. Maybe not who's all listening to me, but if all Democrats do it, oh my God. Look what happened in Georgia. Georgia out of the blue because of Stacey Abrams. Georgia out of the blue became blue because everyone showed up. You could switch a lot of states. Missouri would be in play. Maybe not Indiana, but Ohio sure as heck would be. Maybe even Florida. It means far more than a meme, a protest, a cute little hat, a slogan, an Instagram post. It means so much more to go register to vote and vote on Election Day. So please, that is your only goal right now. That is your only goal. Eyes on the prize, people. Eyes on the prize. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Have we heard from Jeff yet?
Yep, he's here and ready to go.
Is he? Oh, for God's sakes. All right, we'll get to Jeff Stein when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950.
You're just another recovering heart. Oh. Jeff
Stein's our national and presidential expert, noted author. You can find his books over at Next Chapter Books, totallyiowa.com. The Iowa Politics Report is the show that comes from KXEL, as well as the Iowa Business Report in Cedar Falls, Waterloo. And if you are watching on the live stream, oh boy, do we have a treat for you. Jeff Stein is actually, you can watch Jeff make his arguments, which, okay. He is kind enough to join us on a video stream. Hi, Jeff.
The joy is mine because I get to see you in real time. I mean, that's, you know, that's worth the price of admission, my friend, right there.
That is, could they have possibly put that camera in a worse location in the studio? I don't think they could have. I mean,
you know, it just reminds me of, as a lawyer, I'd go visit people in jail, and there was a security camera always in the corner that looked down at the individual. So I'm guessing folks in the hallway are looking in going, I don't know. I don't think we can break him yet, but he's getting close.
I look like one of those dune worms. So, you know, it's not a good angle. I mean, that's tough.
Well, you know, I mean, it's natural, and that's what's important. And I hate to start this new adventure of live streaming by actually agreeing with you about something.
Uh-oh.
I know. This, you're going to pull the plug in the live stream, but I have tried to get somebody to buy into my thought that it was a Republican who leaked that, and nobody will buy in. And
but you and I, but I you and I,
you hit up on it perfectly. The idea is the ruling will not change. This is going to be the ruling. If it is handed down for the first time in June, that's much closer in time to the election, including some primaries, by the way, that are important. This way, by it being leaked, I mean, again, to your point, people don't remember what they had for breakfast. And so how can you expect those who are very angry about this on May 4th to maintain that level of activism for 7 months? That's difficult.
In the day and age,
it makes perfect sense that it would be somebody on the right who would have leaked it.
Well, in this day and age of social media, I mean, it's like I said, they love posting the picture of the protest, but then they just don't vote. And one thing we know is every Republican will vote. They always do. They show up. It's religion to them when it comes to this. Democrats, I was really outraged 3 months ago, but there's something on Netflix I want to watch, and it's that simple. And so
I developed a meme and I've done my part. That is a very good line as well. Well, here's the thing, though, for Republicans. I understand the theory of a Republican leaking it, get it out there, rip the Band-Aid off, and then let the waters calm. For both sides of the political spectrum, abortion has been a flashpoint for fundraising and mobilizing people to vote. How many Republicans, if this is the ruling, will say, well, there we go. We fought the good fight. How many of them may stay home? So, in other words, your point about interested Democrats who mobilize, there might be a multiplier effect. In other words, a lot of Republicans, if they've lost their key issue, if they stay home and you have these mobilized Democrats showing up, that's a tremendous shift in what we would have said a week ago.
We're going to focus on Alito here in a second, but there's one other element of this leak that I think we have to put forward, and that is a larger fight within the Republican Party. Roberts, he does not want to be the Chief Justice on the Supreme Court that overturns this. He does not want to be. There is some speculation that he has been working on Kavanaugh to get Kavanaugh to change his mind or at least agree to a toned-down version of this. what this leak does, and this is why I scream, this screams Republican releasing it, probably someone from Alito's office, if you want to know the truth, is that by this being leaked, you just said it, it locks it in. That now Kavanaugh really can't be walked back. And if there was a feeling by Alito that this was that Roberts was going to indeed change the mind of someone, he quickly runs out, hands it to Politico, and basically, you know, kind of kiboshes that. And so now it's out and it's not going to get changed.
Those watching on the video will notice you're not wearing tinfoil hats.
Nope.
I'm not wearing a tinfoil hat. Here is what could be going on, and it's very close to what you said. Now, I'm going to roll this back and make a few people's heads explode. I am sure you have discussed the point that if Merrick Garland were on the Supreme Court, this would not be the ruling.
Yep.
Okay. But it would be close. And here's why I say that. All right. If you assume Trump got two justices, pick any two of the three, don't care. Thomas and Alito, there's a block of four. If you have Breyer and Kagan and Sotomayor and Garland as the other four, where does that put John Roberts, Matt? He's the swing vote. And you're right. He does not want to be the Chief Justice that overturns this decision. You would have had, if Garland were on the court, Roe versus Wade changed, limited, some would say weakened, but you still would have the precedent that was not fully overturned. My guess is, and I think Roberts would have voted for that. Roberts would have voted for weakening, but not eliminating Roe. All right. So for everyone who says if Garland were on the court, Roe would be intact. I say no, not intact, but still not overturned. What if Roberts was pushing, to your information, Kavanaugh, to soften it, to not flat out overturn Roe and Casey, the companion case 20 years later, but to soften it to where Roberts would be more comfortable? That would anger Alito to the point of saying, I want my words, my draft from February to be out in the world so that no matter what happens after this, the world knows I had five votes for this. Mm-hmm. And if a weaker decision comes down, then Alito can say, you know, I did my part. So this could be Alito or someone on his side, his clerks, whomever, saying, we are at risk of losing what we thought we had here with this overturning, and they're going to water it down, and we want to mobilize people to, you know, tell Kavanaugh to stand firm. That's just as likely as any of the other scenarios we've heard.
Well, and you have to look at this ruling. Alito, clearly, this is not about one issue. I mean, he tries to say, well, my favorite part of it is when he says, well, thank God we've stopped the fighting between the two sides on this ruling. I mean, God, the implication that this is somehow going to calm things down in this country. Okay, good luck with that. That being said, I mean, he clearly, there's an element of this ruling where he's like, this is only being applied to abortion. Do not try to apply this to anyone else. But as I said at the beginning of the show, there is a laundry list. I mean, if you've just undone the 14th Amendment's due process clause where it talks about liberty, which has been not only is a laundry list of cases, contraception, gay marriage, the striking down the sodomy laws, all these things, that was what the Supreme Court in established, and not just one or two, not 5-4 rulings, for many years said, no, that you have a right to privacy through the Liberty Clause. And so you do have the ability to do this. He clearly, I think when you look at Alito and you look at this ruling, this is not a one and done. This is him establishing with this 5-vote majority that we are going to go after a lot of these things. And the argument they'll say, the straw dog argument that they'll put forward is, oh, well, we're not really banning it. We're putting it back to the states, knowing there will be large swaths of this country where interracial marriage can't happen again. That was the Loving case under the same exact clause. And I guarantee you there's a state that's probably thinking about trying to put that out there. Anti-gay marriage is going to go away. They have done this for a reason because clearly the last 50 years, and I think the best way to describe the main focus here of bedroom issues, whether that's, you know, an abortion, contraception, gay marriage, anti-sodomy laws, that they are infuriated that those rules were being overturned, and now this is an attempt to basically stop that and return things back to a 1950s kind of mentality.
Well, the first thing with regard to just the protocol, every appellate case is factually distinct. So in other words, the justice, whoever's writing it in any case, they typically make it very clear that it is limited to the facts of that case. That doesn't mean that's how they'll act in the future, right, to your point. But obviously, he's going to say this only has to do with what we believe was an improper interpretation to grant a right of privacy with regard to abortion. And they're going to underline it, and they'll bold it and italicize it. They might even highlight it when they hand out the ruling, because that's what they have to say. Cases have to come before the court, however. The court does not go looking for cases. Will there be, shall we say, willing dance partners in certain states who want to roll the clock back, as you suggest, pass laws that they know somebody's going to challenge so they can get before the Supreme Court? Sure, that could happen, obviously. But notice, one of the things that is interesting about if this decision does come down the way that the leak shows. For example, my state of Iowa, nothing's going to change. Not one thing, because the Iowa Supreme Court separately blunted attempts for there to be laws and for there to be any limitations by interpreting within the Constitution, the state Constitution, a right for open abortion. Other states are the same way. Now, I understand that may not satisfy a lot of people, but what I'm saying is, even if Roe is overturned, different states may act differently, and their own constitutions may be interpreted by their own Supreme Courts in a way that makes whatever the Alito ruling does may make it totally irrelevant, especially based upon public backlash.
Well, we already know, I mean, in Minnesota here, North Dakota, South Dakota will be illegal tomorrow, if the day that passes. It will be illegal the next day. Iowa, Wisconsin will have, triggers that will go into place. Minnesota, we have a case called Doe versus Gomez from a few years back that actually, solidifies abortion rights and actually takes them further than the federal government did. So we are going to be an oasis here. The question I have is that there's already starting to see people say, we're going to charge people, pregnant women who go to a state and get an abortion when they come back under our laws, I think it's in Missouri and in Tennessee, they've actually already introduced laws that will prevent pregnant women from leaving the state. Well, good luck trying to enforce that. But they're going to try to make arguments that you can't leave the state if you're pregnant because we just don't want to get you to get an abortion. It's going to be interesting to see where the Supreme Court comes down on that, because let's face it, then you could actually get into a Dred Scott situation where Dred Scott, that case, even though there was a slave that came to Minnesota, which was supposedly a free state, he sued saying, well, I was in Minnesota, I'm free. The Supreme Court came down and said, no, that even the free states have to recognize the slave rights of the southern states, which basically meant slavery was everywhere, and next thing you know, civil war. If you come down and all of a sudden say that, well, you can prevent people from leaving your state or prosecute a person who goes to a state and legally gets an abortion when they come back, well, you're going to have some interesting results with that. I mean, it's going to be kind of getting into that relative, it doesn't matter what the states say. These rules apply everywhere.
Well, and regardless, you've got the Commerce Clause of the Constitution, which to this point has been interpreted broadly enough that it would not limit travel. Now, you're suggesting a situation where this is the first of many dominoes to fall, not just with the issue of abortion, but with regard to other issues. Very possible. I mean, that it's just as likely as not. But that's where I hate to mention this because it angers people, but I will just simply say it. I went to law school at the University of Iowa, pretty liberal place, pretty liberal law school. All right. And I even had professors, and this is now Roe was around for 15 years at the time. So it's whatever, 25 years ago. And even the most liberal of professors who loved the outcome said the ruling had some constitutional issues. In other words, they liked the result. They were worried about the path to get there. If you buy into that, those other cases, Commerce Clause, et cetera, are more fundamentally sound. And so it may not be as broad a sweep as some fear. I just lay that out there. I'm not suggesting I'm taking a side in the issue. I'm just laying that out there as something that it just may not be as bad as some fear.
I think that one of the things that is a problem with that interpretation, and nothing against your professor there, but it's not like there hasn't been numerous cases that have gone up there and they've said, oh, no, that's the precedent was set. And so it has been challenged over and over and over again. And they said, no, we don't find the constitutional problem. It's now. So what's Alito doing? Alito's basically saying we're going to go back to the original rulings, say that the Supreme Court justices that made those rulings were wrong. They should have never interpreted this way any play. And so it's a big redo. And there's once you pull the worms out of the can on that, you're not going to get them back in.
Well, and that's the distinction. This is, again, very much a legal distinction. Distinguishing Roe versus Wade is one thing. Overruling it is another. And overruling it means you just go back to where you were before. When the Supreme Court upheld precedent these last however many, almost 50 years, well, the Supreme Court threw out a precedent in 1954 in Brown versus Board of Education. Mm-hmm. That was in place for 58 years. But they expressly overruled Plessy versus Ferguson. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you have longstanding precedent that may be overturned, it's rare, but it's not totally unique. The distinguishing point here, though, is all of the, to your point, all of the cases in the past, I would say, where they've totally thrown something out and they've said we're overruling it, it's because society has progressed in a certain way. You know, Brown versus Board of Education, separate is not equal. So it's an overruling of that principle. This is a reversion. And that does make this factually distinctive and more unique.
It does. I mean, it would be like, I mean, and not saying that they're doing this, but it'd be like saying, oh yeah, slavery is still legal. I mean, what? You know, all of a sudden you're going back and you're doing something that's been legally set that was overturned years ago with solid legal, you know, standards. And now they're coming back. It's like, no, you wildly misinterpreted it. It's still legal. And people would be outraged. I'll tell you what, we'll come back to the some of the other things Alito said in this, as well as also, are the Supreme Court justices in trouble if they basically said we're not going to touch Roe v. Wade when they were going through their confirmation hearings under oath? 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Jeff Stein joining us on the video, too. Watch on AM 950's Facebook page, as well as Progressive Citizen X as well. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. You're just another recovering heart. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein joining us. And once again, if you're watching on video, we got video with Jeff live with us down in Iowa, which is a nice thing. Whose dog?
I thought it was only appropriate because every video of a call or something has to have a child or an animal. And so I heard a dog and looked, and there Molly was. And so our engineer is going to fix some things in the control room, and Molly's there to help. So, you know, she's now famous. She's now been seen across, several suburbs of Minneapolis.
Oh, no, it's the Metroplex, my friend, the entire Metroplex.
Yes.
You brought up Plessy. One of my, I thought, okay, there is an element of this ruling that Alito has written for Fox News and other groups. And that is, there is that part in there where he says, well, the courts have already done this before, and he brought up Plessy versus Ferguson. He also brought up the case Komatsu versus the United States, where basically the holding of Japanese Americans during World War II, and said, we've revisited those cases and overturned them. So if you weren't bothered by that, you can't be bothered by this. And I said, if there's ever an element of a ruling that's just made for right-wing talking heads to sit there and say, see, he's right. If they're not for this, then they're for Plessy versus Ferguson still being intact. They're just horrible Democrats. I mean, it is written for right-wing talking heads.
There's a lot of that ruling that is written to anticipate criticism.
Yes.
Okay, and pointing out we should not be influenced on by public opinion. We have overturned longstanding precedent before. Okay, that's all very well true, but I do think there's a distinguishing point, which is what we talked about before the break, about what it does. Usually when you're breaking a precedent, it's to expand rights. It is not to pull back on rights. And so that does make this factually distinctive, I would say.
Those cases have nothing to do with Alito's argument, which is also, it's like there's nothing comparable. It just is smarminess for smarminess' sake.
It's comparable because of the fact it's a 50-year precedent. But again, it's meaningless. It's sort of like for somebody who said he wasn't worried about public opinion, he included a lot of things in there that are rebutting public opinion arguments.
Exactly. Is there a legal problem for a Supreme Court justice nominated when they go in there and they're under oath and they say very directly, we're not going to touch Roe v. Wade?
Roberts, to my knowledge, in my study of this so far, Roberts is the only one who said Roe is settled law. The other said, well, I would have to look at the facts of the case and the law involved. And yes, it is precedent, but I think they weaseled it just enough to where it is not, they did not make a declarative statement of, I will not touch Roe. Now, what they told the senators like Susan Collins in closed doors, behind closed doors, that's a whole different issue, but not a Roe.
You and I could spend another entire show on Susan Collins, who right now is, her value is sinking and sinking fast. Once again, Jeff Stein, we'll put the Iowa Politics Report out there. It is good to see you, my friend, dog and all.
Well, it's good to see you. Suck mug and all, or whatever else you have in the studio there.
Oh, it's my drinks, my beverages. Thanks, Jeff. Hour two of the show, that's coming up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. A lot of people agreeing with Jeff on the live stream comment section. Okay. That's new.
Happens every once in a while.
Really? Wow. You thought he was good. He always makes two good points. That's why I'm on the air. That's for sure. But it just, we'll get more into that here in just a little bit. Quick note here. Todd Colid, thank you very much for sponsoring AM 950 all this week. Todd used to live here in Minneapolis, St. Paul, moved to Spain, and he's living over there, but he still loves the station, still listens to us all the time. Thank you very much, my friend. And he, of course, wants to help sponsor the station, so he basically sponsors a week of radio. You can, too. 952-946-8885, 952-946-8885 for more information. Of course, we've been talking about this for the last few months. Todd's friend Paul Nyland is in Kyiv. He has been there for 19 years. He operates a company called Lifeline Ukraine. It's a mental health and suicide prevention hotline in Ukraine. And as you can imagine right now, it is a service that is in high demand. And as well, they're under attack too. So if you can, make a donation. Help Lifeline Ukraine. Make a donation there and help give them the services that the Ukrainians need right now as the Russians, once again, are just truly evil. Just truly evil. Once again, it's Lifeline Ukraine. I'll link to everything a little bit later on. So we could talk, Brett, here really quick about the Wild. What time is the game tonight? Do you know?
Tonight and Friday are all 8:30 starts.
Oh, thank gosh. I love when they reward the Central United States by giving them West Coast start times.
Well, they always do this, or not always, but I think that the formula, they do four games a day. They have the two games on the East Coast, get the early ones. Then if you're in the Central, oh, good, you get the late 8:30 game.
Yeah.
Which is convenient.
Yeah. I got to tell you the truth. I'm not going to watch. I'm just, right now, they've not beaten the St. Louis Blues all year long. They looked atrocious. It wasn't just, I know I've had a few people say it was the choice of Fleury and goal. No. It was.
You can't win many games if you don't score any goals.
If it was 6-5, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
But it was 4-0. That was a lot of problems. Well,
I watched the third period. He had some phenomenal saves in that third period. The defense just hung him out to dry a few times.
Yeah, that's the problem. And there are times where the Wild against St. Louis for some reason just look like a college team. And they do. They look where all five guys are on one side of the ice, leaving three guys wide open against the goalie. And it's just, you're like, what are you doing? Just you don't you know how to set up your zone? You got to do that.
I wonder if that Winter Classic debacle kind of got in their head, like, oh, we're playing at home. It's the biggest game we've had outdoors, and we and got our clocks cleaned.
Yeah, they got their clocks, and they got their clocks cleaned in game one. I'm just presuming that it's going to be 4-0. It's going to be a 4-0 sweep by the Blues, and we're done. Because that's just what Wild hockey does.
That was, 5 years ago? I think we were in this exact same situation. The Wild had home ice against the Blues in the first round. I think they lost the first two games at home, won a game in St. Louis, but then lost games 4 and 5.
We tried!
Yeah. It'll probably be the same thing. You're right.
Something else I want to bring up that is kind of interesting. All right. I have talked about messaging and how the conservatives are incredibly good at it. Today, my first Democrat of the day was someone who was in outstate Minnesota, who called when I was like, come on in here, you come on, we get to introduce you, find out who you are, and you know, we try to make get you some donations and get you some volunteers, help you out in your campaign. And of course I get the, I'm just gonna focus on local media that kind of hates my guts because I'm the Democrat, and you're like, wow, really? And I've made the comment that sometimes that the Republicans, if you take the guy from the very northwestern part of the state and he gets a call from a radio station in the very southeastern part of the state, the complete polar opposite, and says, we'd like to do an interview for you. The Republicans say, when and where? I'll be there. No problem. They get messaging far better than the DFL does. And it's not just the straightforward stuff, the interviews and stuff like this, or controlling the narrative in the local media, which the Republicans do all the freaking time. Like I said, one of the things I pointed out at the very beginning of the show is, the way that the anti-abortion crowd has been portrayed over the last 40 years is this strong, massive majority. And now that it's being overturned, everyone's saying, hey, by the way, look at these polling numbers that say 80% of the population wants abortion to stay legal. Oh, wow. So this is really a fringe item that we gave. Republicans are very good at that, controlling the media narrative. They do that very well. But it's what they do to the Democrats sometimes, which is truly astounding. I mean, that they you saw it. I mean, I go back to Ebola, it's scaring. They created an entirely fake pandemic, which was going to kill us all. It wasn't if, it was when. It was going to kill us all. And then the day of the election, no one said anything about it. They had literally, the news media of this country was just so used to press feeds from the Republicans on this Ebola crisis. When they stopped because they didn't need to push it anymore on election day, the story just immediately stopped nationwide. And that was, it shows you how good at control they are. And they scared enough Democrats to stay away. That's what they do. Of course, you can look at, look at how they, well, I'm just going to protest both candidates in 2016 and stay home. Well, if you ever hear someone say that, that's a Republican plant because Republicans themselves always show up. So there's no way in the world that person's Republican unless they're trying to get you to not vote. And so that's kind of their narrative. They're very good at this. Over the last 2 days, since the Alito ruling came on out, I have had more social media interactions, and people that went out to the rally yesterday said they were running into quote unquote, I'm going to call them quote unquote, social Democrats who are out there who are saying the only thing that's going to change everything is by sending a message and not voting. What? You realize that not voting has gotten us this. This Alito ruling is the epitome of Democrats sitting out the 2016 election, Trump putting 3 Supreme Court justices on there, all 3 of which have voted with this obnoxious ruling, that is quite literally the epitome of what the last thing we should do. But now, and I'm actually starting to wonder if this is that, even if they're showing up in public at these rallies or whatever, they're actually Republican plants, like these, like the pro dope candidates from the 2020 election cycle that were only there to basically peel off votes away from Democrats. I think the Republicans have already realized that this has angered a lot of people, and so immediately we're talking. They must have instantaneous reaction groups ready to go at a moment's notice, saying, get out to these rallies and start telling people, yeah, the only way you're going to send the message is by not voting. And then you'll be proud. So I want everyone to listen to me right now. If someone comes up to you and says, over the next 3 or 4 months, the only way you're going to send a message is by not voting, the exact phrase I want you to use is this. F you. No, seriously. F you. Okay? Because that is not going to solve anything. Hey, I'm the first guy to admit I wish we had more political parties than two. I really do. But this is the game we've got right now. And on one side, we clearly see what they're going to do. And the other side is trying to stop them. So you sitting out is not going to hurt the side that's hurting everyone. It's only going to hurt the side that wants to stop them from hurting everyone. So shut the hell up. If anyone does, and you hear it social, if it's on social media, if it's in person, big old F you, because that, I think, is either it's a completely and totally ignorant far lefty who basically doesn't understand that just because the person they're standing next to agrees with them only on 92% of the issues, that the other 8 issues are the only ones that matter, you know, then they're worthless. But I actually don't think it is lefties. I think it is Republican plants already getting out there to try to convince people to not vote. Brett, how crazy am I with that thought process?
I don't think Republicans would ever lie about something like
Oh, God, no. And like they care about life, of course. Life. Oh, that's the only thing they care about until that child is born and then they're a moocher.
I mean, yeah. Seriously, on your point, though, I mean, all you got to do is look at the history of what they've done over the past few decades to know that it's very plausible that they're doing that.
Yeah, I think it is. And it's what remarkable is how quickly their reaction teams got out. And are already, it's like, the only way you're going to send a message to both of these parties is by not voting. That is a Republican ploy. So basically, block them, tell them to go blank themselves, and off you go. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Hannah Valento is going to join us, 33A Democrat of the Day up in the northeast part of the metro there. Oh, great, yeah. Oh, that's just a beautiful part of the country. Or the Hugo on the eastern side of White Bear. Oh, Amado Medi, I believe, is up there too. Oh, cripes. We'll talk with I will not talk like that with Hannah.
Got some real humdingers of positions.
Oh, yeah, you're doing. Oh, that sounds like really swell at what you're doing over there. That's just a beaut. Oh, cripes. No, I'm not going to do that. I will actually talk to her as a normal Democrat of the day. Minnesota coronavirus update. And I got a few stories here to get to before we get to Hannah. Wednesday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 2,570 newly reported cases, 3 newly reported deaths. I have to admit, my daughter is one of them. She is currently locked in the dungeon at the McNeil compound. You know, pretty much asymptomatic, but, you know, just kind of one of those things. Brett, you do not have kids. I am getting an insane amount of the notes from school now saying your child has been exposed. Your child has been exposed. Your child has been exposed. You know, it is amazing how quickly this is climbing again.
So a few weeks ago, were you in a period where you generally weren't getting that many notes and now it's up?
We had about a month and a half where there wasn't one.
Wow.
There wasn't one right after the Omicron wave ended. And then all of a sudden, oh, you got a notice again. And all of a sudden, it's now 4 notices in a day. And and what they're saying, once again, and we've had Dr. Joe, and see if I can get Dr. Joe on tomorrow. The Omicron, the BA2 variant of Omicron is this one. It is contagious. It is not nearly as lethal. And as a matter of fact, I'll get to the numbers here in the hospital. But once again, you've got 2,570. That's a lot of people in one day getting COVID. And I'm wondering if that might be some holdovers from the weekend. State's COVID-19 death toll now 12,515. Through today's update, includes case data that was reported in the 24-hour period at 4 a.m. on Tuesday. Through May 3rd, the number of people with COVID hospitalized in Minnesota is actually down 286 from 305 reported on May 2nd. So once again, you're not seeing the hospitalizations rise, nor are you seeing the ICU patients. The number of people hospitalized, 22 people are in intensive care. That's even. 264 are in non-ICU care. That's down from 283. So it's just it's more just as contagious, kind of like a little bit of a cold almost with this one. Now, once again, people are dying, and we do have people in the hospital. Take care. Get vaccinated. Wear a mask. Be careful. But it just does seem to be more of a contagious thing. As of May 2nd, the state reported that 3,907,729 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. 3,701,315 people have completed their vaccine series. There are 2,553,262 Minnesotans up to date with their vaccine shots, which includes boosters. Total number of people in the state of Minnesota who have had COVID-19, 1,459,345. And once again, that is likely a grossly underreported number. Grossly underreported. It is more than likely close to 60% of the state has had COVID, which is unbelievable. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I got two more stories on COVID. We'll get to those after the break. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Whoa.
So I mentioned COVID. Of course, Dr. Joe is listening. Hi, Dr. Joe. We'll see if we can get you on tomorrow, okay? He sends me, and I love a good read, the information that basically says the problem here is how tight is your face mask? This is, you know, just some light reading for me here. Perimeter leakage of face mask and the effect on the mask's efficiency. All righty. So, yeah, and well, I will say this. Considering how many people just kind of have what looks like a veil over their face, you know, I don't think that's helping. I think, yeah, I got the nice ones, the N95s. I got the over the ears. Those are not, as opposed to the ones that are, you know, strapped to the back of your head, so it's like someone saran wrapped your face.
Right.
You know,
No, I have those too. They work great. They're comfortable.
Oh, yeah, they are. Yeah. There's not a lot of leakage there.
No.
As a matter of fact, I notice when I run that you know, I'm really kind of collapsing those down quite a bit. You know, I'm afraid I'm going to have to inhale one at some point because I'm running with that on. So that's it's a difficult challenge. Dr. Joe, thank you. I will some light bedtime reading tonight. For myself, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. A coronavirus subvariant experts believed is more contagious than the current dominantly BA2 strain has been detected in Minnesota. Oh, boy. The latest weekly data from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention shows that BA212.1, the latest Omicron variant, is that the Omicron variant or the latest, you know, hot band from Korea? I don't know. BA212.1, I think that is.
Kind of variants of variants of variants. Yeah, that does. They might as well just make them K-pop bands.
It's a K-pop band. It is. I love them. Unfortunately, so does my daughter. The latest Omicron variant holding across the country accounted for nearly 37% of new cases nationwide last week. So far, fewer than 20 cases of the BA2.12.1 have confirmed in Minnesota. They need a better name. They just need it.
Like pie at this point. You're going to start naming these things.
Thor. Just call it Thor. Yeah. It's confirmed in Minnesota. A spokesperson with the Minnesota Department of Health told Bring Me the News on Tuesday. Nationally, by the way, isn't that a good idea? Wait a second here. Let's name the variants after the current Marvel movie in the theater. Because those are changing about the same amount of time that the variants are. So last year we had problems with Shang-Chi. Now you're having problems with Spider-Man. Oh, look, Doctor Strange just showed up. Oh, come on, man. By the summer, the next one there will be Thor. What's coming out? Is there one coming out this fall?
Yeah, I think it might be one of the new ones that's this fall. Or one of the lesser-known franchises. That name.
If before you say to yourself, wow, that's a lot of Marvel movies that are out there, it's far more variants of coronavirus at this point. I think that's the problem. Nationally, surveillance reporting indicates that BA2.12.1 does not seem to cause more severe disease than Omicron. Spokesperson wrote in an email. However, it will see an additional data before they can definitively say BA2.12.1 is expected to soon outpace BA2 across the country. It's already the dominant strain of some East Coast states. including New York, the CDC believes BA 2.1, God, that's annoying to say, is about 25% more transmissible than BA2. We have very little contagious variant out there. It's going to be hard to ensure that no one gets COVID in America, and that's not even a policy goal, said Ashisha Jha, of the COVID-19 coordinator under President Biden at a news conference on Tuesday. Still, experts believe people can protect themselves from severe illness by staying up to date with vaccine shots and booster shots. I'm headed over to the VA on Monday, I believe it is. Additional evaluation is currently underway to understand the impact of BA 2.1 on vaccine effectiveness, said Director Rochelle Walensky in last week. But importantly, we continue to believe that those who have been vaccinated, and especially those who are boosted, continue to have strong protection against severe disease, even from BA 2.1. If you're naming the next one BA 2.1, 2.1.6.9994, 2.1, my God, it's like you're an internet troll at this point. Stop it. I'm not numbering freaking galaxies here. What's the next letter in the Greek alphabet? What's after Omicron? Right? Get the next letter in there.
It is a weakness of scientists naming things. That's why with meteorologists, we decided to name hurricanes.
Oh, boy. We are sitting around. We've come up with a 472-digit number that I think encompasses the name perfectly.
And you'll see cleverly how this part of the number is the square root of the beginning part. And that's why it fits.
See how many jokes we could make with those numbers. Oh, God. Come on, guys. What's the next? What is after Omicron in the Greek alphabet?
Oh, that's a good question.
Why don't you check on the old internet there we've got here. I'm doing the show. So you see if you can find out what would come after Omicron. Why haven't we gone there? Governor Tim Walz, Minnesota Health Commissioner Jan Malcolm received a second COVID-19 booster on Wednesday, urged other vulnerable groups to consider getting extra protection amid rising viral spread. While second boosters have been available for a month, Walz and Malcolm said they sought their shots now before summer gatherings and to stretch immunity into next fall when new vaccination boosters could be recommended by COVID-19 as the pandemic persists. Will we be boosted yearly? Will we have to have it every 6 months? Asked the 58-year-old governor. Those things are yet to be determined. We are learning more about the variants and what the virus is at, but it's absolutely clear that the boosters are keeping people out of the hospital and reducing death rates. They are indeed. Minnesota on Wednesday reported another 2,570 coronavirus infections, and closer examination of positive specimens showed the fast-spreading BA2 subvariant, oh God, causing almost all the viral spread in Minnesota, and even faster spreading BA 2.1 subvariant is causing the nation's highest COVID-19 rates in the Northeast now. The latest uptick isn't producing the same rate of severe illness and hospitalizations, though, which is good, which they've declined from 305 on Monday to 286 on Tuesday. So there's some good news there. What
pie.
Is pie?
Yep.
Why are they not going with pie? Everyone loves pie.
Yeah.
I love pie. Strawberry rhubarb season almost coming in here. So what's after pie?
Omega.
Oh, come on, man. Don't tell me that every science nerd in this country doesn't have a yes. It's Omega.
You know, if pi is the next variant, or whenever they come up with variants of pi, they're going to make it like 3.14 or whatever the number is.
Don't do that. Don't. Stop, science guys. Stop. No. Okay. No. Just give us a name. It's like you're trying too hard. When I look at a hurricane name and it's got an X in it, that's the first letter. I'm like, oh, what are you doing? Don't do that. Steve, Chuck, Phil, whatever you need to do. You don't need to get crafty there. Well, he was the name of a Greek philosopher. Really? Really? Great. Okay. I'm sure he's glad he just got his name on a category 4. Yeah, I'm sure he's really brimming with pride on that one as it scours Louisiana clean. Yeah, just go with pi or omega. You want to go with omega, science guys. Science guys, you want to go with omega. You know you do. Go with omega. Stop with the numbers and decimal points. It's getting confusing at this point. I will say this. I think I did read an article that did say it is actually a positive sign that so far what we're seeing is Omicron was more contagious but less lethal than Delta. Now you saw BA2, more contagious, less lethal than I believe it was less lethal than Omicron. And now you got the BA 2.1, which is contagious, but not, it doesn't seem to be as deadly or hospital, driving up the hospital rate as the other ones. That is actually a good sign. And that this might be kind of leveling out here. Once again, Dr. Joe is the only person I trust on any of this stuff. So I'm going to have him back on the air with us tomorrow. I'm going to ask him, come on, what Greek letter would you go with, Dr. Joe? He's smart. Omega, pi, is mu in there somewhere? We didn't do mu, did we?
They skipped a few of them. I already closed the page, but there was two letters we skipped.
Mu is one of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Lambda?
No, lambda, I think, was one. It was briefly a variant I think they had last year, like last spring, that didn't really go anywhere. Are you just going to list Greek names now?
Dr. Joe is turned. Apparently, I've got a list of. He's got a new. WHO has got a new name of way of naming COVID-19 coronavirus names. Oh, and once again, I got more study reading tonight from Dr. Joe. We'll have him on the air with us. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. Democrat of the day, Hannah Valento. 33A. When we do return, it's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. For Democrat of the day today, we head up to 33A. Hannah Valento is kind enough to join us. She is running for that seat, which is up in the northeast part of the metro. Kind enough today to join us to talk about her campaign. Hi, Hannah.
Hi there.
How are you today?
Good. How about you?
I'm doing very well. I have made the comment, Hannah Valento is possibly one of the coolest names I've ever heard in my entire life. You sound like a detective in a 1947 LA noir film. My goodness. It's nice to have you on the air here. The district, we should say, and once again, this is after the new redistricting, the southern side of Forest Lake, the southern side of Forest Lake, but the town of Forest Lake, Hugo, Matamidi, a little Delwood in there, really kind of coming up right off of the 494 interstate there and going north up to Forest Lake, a nice little stretch there.
Yeah, it is.
I'll tell you what, why don't we find out a little bit more about you? Who exactly is Hannah Valento?
Yeah, so I've lived in the district actually my entire life. I grew up in Hugo, now I live in Forest Lake. I'm a licensed attorney for the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Native Tribe up in Onania, and I'm also on the Forest Lake City Council.
How long have you been a part of the Forest Lake City Council?
I've been part of the Forest Lake City Council since 2020.
Okay. And what prompted you? I mean, obviously, you know, with your legal matters, obviously dealing with matters there. I mean, is that how you got interested in working in government?
Yeah. Well, I've kind of always been interested in policy. And I went to law school because I wanted to help people. But I didn't really necessarily know exactly what I wanted to do because I didn't want to go into the courtroom. And so finding myself more and more interested in policy, I obviously got my eyes went towards the legislative. But unfortunately, the state's legislative branch doesn't hire too often for internal staff. Mm-hmm. And I found a posting for the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe, and they have a legislative branch, so I applied. So that's what kind of got me into politics and government. Yeah.
And I tell you what, you get Vardy. I was part of my city council. I was part of the planning and zoning committee. And there, you get involved in something like that. I got to tell you, that is one of the more gratifying elements of serving in politics. Is when you, like yourself, you're in Forest Lake, you're in your town, and you see it develop. You get issues which matter to you directly. I always thought it was one of the best ways to get involved in politics on that level.
Oh yeah, for sure. The people you meet and how you can just make a change and a direct impact to your own community is so, it's just the best feeling there is. And with being sitting on a local government body, you also get to go into volunteer programs and go to all of the events that are put on. And it's just such a gratifying experience.
So you're in the Forest Lake City Council, and all of a sudden you got 33A opens up. What was the deciding factor that you said, you know what, I want to go to St. Paul?
Yeah. So, I once 33A, once they redistricted, I looked at the map and it truly me, because I would just love to be a representative for the district to bring our community together.
Uh-oh.
Has divided everyone. And I just want to bring our community together regardless of political affiliations. I want to listen to everyone and just be there for everyone in the community.
And you did, unfortunately, you did cut out there a little bit there, but it must be nice to be the fact that you've lived there your entire life. It gives you a perspective that, unfortunately, I will say a lot of politicians today, they move into a district, they've only been there for a few years. They don't kind of get the grasp of the district like you have. My gosh, I mean, you know that district backwards and forwards.
Oh yeah, I've literally seen Hugo go from not having a grocery store, not having the only pizza restaurant they had was Domino's Pizza, and now it's huge. It's going in constantly, and it's just growing. It's been so cool to see all of the community in the district grow.
So once again, Hannah Valento is joining us, Minnesota House Race 33A, Democrat of the Day. So let's talk about some of the issues that you want to work for here. On your website here, you talk about strong workforce, local businesses, and let's tie that to what you just said. You have seen a community rise as the city has grown, more opportunity, more business. That you have the way there. The thing that's nice is that you can see how business grows there, and it gives you a pretty good perspective on how to do it correctly.
Yeah, definitely. I know local business owners in the area, and some of them are friends of mine, and some of them I've met along the way. And especially in Forest Lake, there's just so much opportunity and growth that's a potential for the area. And I just want to help business owners, especially with what happened with COVID. I want to be there for our business owners and help propel in the area and really strive and survive. And you know, with that, I want to help our workforce and just all around create a great economy in our district.
When you talk about this, it's been interesting. We have, of course, in the last year have seen a real change within the workforce. I mean, people basically tired of the wages not keeping up, benefits not keeping up, and I mean the issue of the day, which I think is daycare when it comes to the workforce, is the fact that so many people were tired of working a 40-hour week and then just handing a check over to someone that was watching their kids. You know, there are some interesting elements there that need to be addressed as the workforce here is basically now saying, you know what, we need to make sure that we're getting value for what we are giving back in return.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, ever since COVID drastically changed the work environment, work-life balance, all of that. And especially with daycare, I don't have kids of my own, but I have heard from so many people the challenges and how expensive daycare is. And even just with COVID, daycares were closing down, you know, because of people were sick, which was obviously the right thing to do. But then how are you supposed to handle going to work, but also not having childcare? It's something that we desperately need to look at.
Your district is also, it's got an interesting side here. When you get down to the southern side of it, there, it's on the east side of White Bear Lake. You're big on a sustainable environment and environmental issues. There was they have some really unique problems with that lake. I have friends that live over there. I've been over there and seen at times when the water levels drop so dramatically there. Talk about that a little bit because, it's as far as a district goes, there's not many districts where you can point to and say, yeah, they've got environmental issues that need to be addressed right away.
Right. Yeah. So that happened a few years ago now. But I know very vaguely what happened with the White Bear Lake is that it was underground water that was being funneled to a different portion or something along those lines. And the DNR actually ended up getting sued. And the DNR had to figure out ways to bring water back into that lake. And I remember driving past there and just seeing how low the levels were. And I was younger then. And I remember talking to people being like, what is happening? Because you could just see the drastic change. And Forest Lake, too, it's a huge lake. And I live on 10 acres and most of my property is wetlands. And I think it's it's one of my priorities is sustainable environment. And I just think it's something that we desperately need to look at because we all love our lakes. We all love what Minnesota has to offer us and our natural resources. And I think in order to keep it pristine and how we want it to be for generations and generations to come, I think it's something we need to keep on the forefront of our minds.
Well, and I think that one of the things we've come to understand here, especially with Line 3 and other issues, is that you are looking, we have been blessed. We are blessed with so much water in the state and a lot of lakes and stuff, but it is an incredibly fragile system that if we don't take care of it and we don't try to preserve it, we will lose it. And as you've seen on the front lines, you can lose it fairly quickly and quite surprisingly. And you just, if anything, it shows you the urgency we need to put out there to make sure all of our waterways stay safe, because once those are not safe, they don't come back.
Oh, most definitely. Yeah, it's a very real danger.
The one of the things too that is, you get with with that as well, and I think that this is interesting for this district because, and once again, when you're looking up in the Northeast Metro, these are a lot of, as you said, these are a lot of areas that were maybe not developed as other parts of the metro outside of that 494, 694 loop have been. It now is on, a lot of people moving up there. Hugo, especially Forest Lake, a lot of friends I have that have moved up to that area. They like it there. Talk about making sure the development that you have as you expand out roads and build more housing is in compliance with that and making sure that it stays on that environmental side.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you actually bring that up because being on the Forest Lake City Council, I'm actually a liaison to the Watershed District. And oh my gosh, I have learned so much about Watershed Districts, what they do, how beneficial they are. They know so much. It is just unbelievable. I can't even keep up with them. But it's just something that I think not that many people know about Watershed Districts. And I would love to highlight them and what they do and all the impact they can just do to our community, because they are truly the protectors of our watershed district, our wetlands, our lakes, keeping our lakes clean, making sure our wetlands stay there and are preserved, because our wetlands are really the lungs of our lakes, and we all appreciate lakes, we all enjoy lakes, we all do recreations on lakes, but with that we need to appreciate the wetlands that come with it too. So I think just really appreciating that what our watershed districts do, especially because they're the ones that developments have to go through, and they have to talk, make sure permits are going through to preserve our wetlands making sure they're in compliance with our watershed district.
Yeah, and you bring up the watershed districts. I've had a lot of experience. Minnehaha Creek, Nine Mile Creek, Shingle Creek. I mean, I was looking, the Herculean task that those guys have put forward in that watershed district to clean up Shingle Creek as much as they can, because once again, I mean, that there was this mistake that was made that, pollution just pouring in and stuff. A lot of these water areas are in growing communities. And so if you got a good watershed district, you can get the growth, but you preserve the water, which is a challenge. And these guys are very good at that. I agree with you. I'm very impressed with watershed districts.
Oh, yeah. They do so much work for our communities.
Yeah. Hannah, let's talk a little bit about education, too. Once again, growing population. You talk about the early childhood education, that there's just not a lot of options out there. The DFL has been fighting very hard, and I've watched this fight for the last 10 years at basically getting that funding in there, fighting the Republicans, making sure that there are options for early children, young children, that the parents have those options on the table. Talk about continuing that fight for the DFL.
Yeah, education all around is something that we need to be looking at more so, and especially early education, just looking at statistics out there, just Googling. Most people think that Minnesota has one of the best educations all around, from early education up until universities as well. We don't. It's an unsettling fact, but it's the truth. And I think we want to be one of the best, right? Because that's what we think we are, but unfortunately we're not. So I think in order to get there, we need to put more money towards all of our education. Education is so important, and you know, we need more counselors. We need to help our teachers. We need to just make sure we have enough bus drivers. For example, in Forest Lake, they didn't even have enough bus drivers this school year that they were canceling some of the bus routes. Mm-hmm. How some of those kids got to school, I don't even know. Because, again, similar to what we were talking about with daycare, how those parents have to balance between their getting their kid to school if the kid can't drive, and their work being acceptable with changing schedule with their kids. It's just all these things that we need to look at with education, and it desperately needs eyes on it.
I like your website a lot. You and your fiance, cute couple. You are, you know, that is a very nice couple. I've actually enjoyed this because there was a guy I interviewed a few weeks back over in 4B, I think it was, out in the Northwest over around Moorhead. And he had a family picture with a little girl on there. It's like, oh my God, I'm loving this. I love when DFLers put their family pictures on there. Wow, you just very, very attractive couple, if I may say.
Yeah, thank you. We actually met in preschool.
Did you? That's great.
We did. Yeah, in Forest Lake.
Did he pull your hair or anything like that?
The funny thing is that I know we met in preschool because that's where my mom and his mom met. I don't actually remember him, but I have a twin brother. Him and my twin brother played hockey together in middle school. And of course I had a crush on him in middle school, but we didn't start dating until after high school.
Oh, that's a fantastic story. That is absolutely fantastic. Hannah Venlento, this is 33A, once again, northeast part of the metro. And Hannah, I think we can all say this is one of those seats. I mean, there's a lot of DFL metro area seats the Republicans aren't even going to try to champion, but they're going to come after that seat, and they're going to come after you for hard, sure, up in 33A, correct?
Yes, they are, most definitely. It's a more red district in the area. 33B is actually blue, but 33A leans more red. But I have the just energy, motivation. I have a team behind me, and I really think we can change this district, especially since it's an open seat currently.
And I think you can too. I think I'm very impressed with you. I think that you can definitely win that seat for the DFL. 33A. Now, this is not requiring you to go a long way. There's a lot of safe DFL seats, St. Paul, Minneapolis, or surrounding suburbs. Get up to 33A, door knock. If you knock on every door in 33A, Hannah Valento will win that district. That's just key. If you knock on every door in that district, Matamidi, Forest Lake, you will win that district. Make a donation as well. Hannah, if people want to make a donation, get involved with your campaign, how do they do that?
Yeah, they can feel free to go on my website, which is hannahvalento.com, and I have a donate button right there at the top. And it's through Act Blue, so it's a very easy way, a very similar way to what most people do. And I would greatly appreciate any donations. They can also send me a check, if they prefer that way, to P.O. Box 232. 5615 150th Street North, Hugo, Minnesota 55038.
And if you want to join the campaign and help out with some volunteering, and like I said, it's a great part of town. Forest Lake's got some great restaurants, got some very good restaurants down in Matamidi as well. If you want to go out there for a weekend, help out, go out and grab some food, help out their campaign, you can register on that website as well. HannahValento.com. That's HannahValento.com. I'll link to everything a little bit later on. Hannah, an absolute pleasure. Congratulations on running, and I'm feeling pretty good. I'm hoping we're going to see you in St. Paul.
Yeah, thank you. It was great talking to you.
Hannah Valento, 33A, Democrat of the day. Let's take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show, 952-946-6205. Hannah Valento, what a great candidate, 33A. And that's a seat the GOP is going to throw a ton of money at that seat. Get up there and help her. Get up there and help her. I mean, this is easy to see where we got the fight we have ahead of ourselves. Going out there and encouraging people to vote for good DFL candidates, voting when election season comes, that's great stuff. Doing a meme on freaking Twitter, that's not, okay? There's some things you can do. Get out there. The way they phone bank nowadays, you can go phone bank for basically any Democrat in the state from your own home. Ta-da! It works that way. By the way, Native Roots Radio, I Am Awake, coming up, Robert Pilot, Wendy, Ogama's back. Ogama, I missed you, my good friend. Go listen. They are fantastic. Native issues, Native news. You do not hear that anywhere else. I don't think in this country, or as they say, Turtle Island, across Turtle Island. It is fantastic. Make sure you're listening in. It's an absolute privilege to be the lead in for that show. And good to have you back, Ogama. Nice to have you there. 952-946-6205. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency recommended the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers not reissue a key permit for the proposed Polymet copper nickel mine over concerns that it could violate the Fond du Lac Reservation's water quality standards. The Army Corps suspended Polymet's Section 404 permit, which allows Polymet to discharge dredge and fill material into a 900 acres of wetlands. Okay, who is the genius that came up with that idea in the first place, you fools? Hey, you know that sludge project? Just dump it over there. Come on, man. You got to do better than that. It reminds me of the days when they first started, pumping oil out of the ground, and they had kerosene was a leftover byproduct, and they had a field by this oil, this where they're doing the processing of the oil. They had this field, and they were just pouring the kerosene on the ground. And then one day, lightning hit. It was pretty impressive, apparently. And someone should have said, hey, you know what? You know that smelly stuff that we probably shouldn't just be pouring it on the ground over here. But here we are. Here we are, 150 years later.
So lightning. Is that Thor?
Flame on, Johnny Storm. Yeah. Wow, that's a fire. Get the wieners, kids. We're going to have some hot dogs tonight. Dear Lord, I can't even comprehend how big that fire must have been. Don't do that. How about we say that? Don't pour the sludge or byproduct just on the ground someplace or in a wetland, you fools. It remained on hold after the EPA in June 2021 determined Polymet may affect the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa's reservation 100 miles downstream. Well, okay, I'm no geologist, botanist, or anything like this, water expert, but I know this. If you're dumping sludge into a wetlands that's near a stream, anything downstream is going to get sludge. It's just the way it works. How did the Army Corps of Engineers settle? Okay, come on, guys. The EPA's recommendation came Tuesday, first day of a three-day public hearing on the permit held by the Army Corps. EPA's key recommendation is that the Corps should not reissue the CWA Section 404 permit for North Met project and proposed, so the EPA said on its website, as the North Met project is currently designed, there is no conditions that EPA can provide to the Corps that would ensure that the discharges from the CWA Section 404 permit activities would comply with the Fond du Lac Band's water quality requirements for its waters. My God, heaven forbid the federal government say, hey, Native Americans, what rules do you have? Okay, we're violating them? Well, we're not going to do that. Okay, see, this is how you do it. And then the Fond du Lac Band is not upset. They're not angry. Sure, some corporate Uber lords and international mining agencies are furious, but screw them. No, you save the water. You save the water. That's how it's done. Come on, Corps engineers. You got to do better than that. Hey, Native Roots up next. Have a good one. We are back on a Thursday. Until then, see ya.